please.
Yeah, I've been finding several times, after about 15 minutes, my body just involuntarily stopped.
Just
stretching,
get up.
And, you know, and it's like, and then I realize what I've done.
What happens probably is that you have a kind of attack of restlessness. You're sitting there and paying attention to your breath, or your mind may be wandering or wherever it is, and your body starts to feel a little bit restless. And usually, what's interesting is that this is really what happens often in our life. Usually, unbeknownst to us, without any conscious choice, we find ourselves down at the ice cream parlor eating away, and then we wake up and say, boy, I must have been having a really hard time at home doing whatever that was. And the body picked itself up and took itself down to some other place. So that's not really uncommon in our life. And in this case, it's probably that kind of restless energy. What you might do is, when you get about 15 minutes into it, is start to listen or feel more attentively. Now, I wonder what's going to happen today near the end of it, and see if you can begin to pay attention to it and maybe even name it again, so that you can learn to be conscious about it rather than it happen without being conscious. Please.
There's things that I have my mind on that I kind of, even when I'm consciously saying to myself, okay, I got to not think, I got to not plan what I got to do this weekend, and I try to think about what I'm doing here, it's very difficult for me sometimes. I found especially this week, because I guess that maybe reflects, you say, what your week has been like too.
Yeah, that, again, it makes very good sense. If your life is very busy and you have a lot going on and you're in the middle of planning many things, then when you sit, that process will continue. You try to let go of it. You can even talk with it a little bit. Listen, I'll plan you in a little bit. Just give me 15 minutes break, and when I get done, I'll thank you plenty. You can really have a little dialogue with that. And it says, no, I want to do it now. I say, listen, we'll take plenty of time. We'll think about the weekend and who we're going to see and what we're going to do. And sometimes that helps a little bit. Other times it won't. You'll do that, but there'll still be such a compelling feeling that you need to do it, that it will keep arising anyway. And in that case, you just need to be kind about it and see that that's what's going on, and maybe every other part of your awareness will be the breath, and alternating with that will be planning. And you just see that there's quite a bit of planning. Usually, when there's a lot of planning, there's a feeling underneath it as well, and sometimes it's helpful to be aware of that. Do you know what feeling is present? Anxiety. That's right. Generally, there's anxiety or some fear, and then we go off planning. Since you know that, you might try to listen in a deeper way, not just to the story of what you're going to do in the weekend or whatever's ahead, but you might try to feel that feeling and acknowledge it. Note anxious, anxious, or fear, fear. And in accepting that, the thoughts may not need to think themselves so much. Remember last week, I believe I said that if you pay attention to moods or feelings, they don't last so long, maybe just 15 seconds or a dozen or 15 labels worth. Did anybody notice if that was so for themselves? Some people found that. All right, let's take about a 5-minute break then. We can come back together again. What I'd like to talk about tonight is something that's at the heart of meditation or spiritual practice. The central quality or central capacity that we have as human beings to see clearly, to awaken. The word Buddha or Bodhi, from which it comes, that means to be awake, to be awakened. And that quality, the awakened heart and mind, is a quality that we can nurture or develop or cultivate in our life. And it's the quality of awareness or mindfulness. Gurdjieff called it self-remembering. Krishnamurti called it bare attention. The attention to what's actually here in our life, rather than all our thoughts and fantasies and hopes and desires, to really come into the present and relate to life as it is for us. This quality is a receptive quality. It's a real listening inwardly with our spirit, with our heart. But it's also active, in that while you're receptive, you need to be present. The active part is to really pay attention. Let me talk about it some, because it's so important in meditation, And maybe as I do, you'll get a better sense of what it means to be mindful or to listen. The quality of attention or listening is not certain things that we confuse it with. One of the things that it's not is the fulfilling of some program from the past. We sit down and often we get into what could be called project meditation. Well, there's tension here. If I do it right, I can get that to go away. And then this comes up. I need to resolve that question or finish that unfinished business or so forth. And we carry our ideas of the past with us. It's like that famous Zen story of the two monks who come to a raging stream and they see this beautiful young maiden standing on the side with a silk kimono, obviously unable to cross without getting all wet and muddy. And one of the monks picks her up in his arms and carries her across and puts her down. And they continue on their way, silently walking to a far temple. Later that afternoon, many hours later, the second monk says to the first, "How could you do that? How could you pick her up? We monks aren't even supposed to look at such beautiful young girls, much less pick them up in our arms and carry them." And the first monk turns to the second and says, "I put her down back by the stream. Are you still carrying her?" And we do that a lot. It's gone. It's done. Finito. The past, you can do nothing about it. And it's true that we have some business sometimes that's unfinished, some grief or some unexpressed love or things like that. But to be aware is not to drag the past into the present, to try and shape it by our ideas from the past, but rather to let go of the past and the future and to come and see things as they are now. Now, what listening is, beside it's that it's not the past, not bringing things from the past into the present, it's also not judgment. This gets kind of subtle. You can sit here, for example, close your eyes and be meditating. All of a sudden you hear a click over there, the door opens and someone walks in, and you note hearing, because we want to start including sound, just like we've included sensations and breath. Gee, that person's coming in late. I wish they wouldn't come in the middle of meditation. Oh yeah, I'm not supposed to be thinking. Back to the breath, in and out. And you're aware of the breath for a little bit. Then your knee starts to hurt. Oh, now my knee's starting to hurt. I hope it doesn't get worse during this. I mean, we're just near the beginning. Oh well, I'll pay attention to it. Pain. Maybe I should move. Yeah, nobody's noticing. Do a little quietly, a little movement. Oh, that's much better. Now back to the breath. In and out. Hey, I'm doing really well with this. Yeah, that's really terrific. Then somebody makes noise around. I wish everybody would just be quiet. I'm really getting the hang of it. Don't disturb me. Hearing. Oh, right. I shouldn't be thinking. Forget that. Back to the breath again. And then I'd say, all right, how was your meditation for that time? You'd say, well, were you aware? Yeah, I heard somebody come in the door. I was aware of the pain in my knee. I heard somebody sniffle. I was aware of the breath. And that was true. You were aware of all those things, plus which each time you had an evaluation. They shouldn't come in. I don't like this pain. I'm doing really good on the breath. That is to say, a judgment of what's good and what's bad. You were aware and you added to it, we do this all the time, our evaluation of it. So that's called judging, which is different than mindfulness. Can you hear the difference? What to do with those judgments? Well, tonight we're going to start working directly with thought. And one thing you can do is just note, oh, judging when it arises. You're doing really good. Judging. You're doing terrible. Judging. Thank you for your opinion. Just go back to the breath. Another way you can relate to it, in addition to just being mindful of it, because if you say, I shouldn't be judging, I should stop that, what is that? It's another judgment. You never get out. It just chases its tail. So you say, there's another judgment. Hey, you did that good. Thank you. Judging. Right back to the breath. The other thing that you can do, which was suggested by Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh, is to sit with a half smile. Just put a little bit of a smile on your lips, the way the Buddha statues that you might have seen in certain places have. Not a big toothy grin or anything, but just enough of a smile so that you'll find somehow that your body affects your heart and your mind, and that smile often gives you a sense of a certain ease or peace, even though your mind will do all kinds of things. I mean, it will go anywhere and it will tell any kind of story, and it has no pride, as I said last week. It will do things. But with that smile, you can kind of receive it without so much judgment. So attention isn't programmed from the past. It isn't judgment. Here's something even more subtle. To be attentive or mindful is not to become quiet or concentrated. Sometimes you can sit and you can be concentrated on your breath and you start to get peaceful and quiet and you're kind of there with your breath, only kind of, and the breath's going in and out and you feel it a little bit, and mostly what you are is peaceful and dull. So you're there, there's a certain degree of concentration, your mind isn't wandering too much, and you're somewhat tranquil. But you don't really feel the beginning or the end of the breath. You're not aware when sensations do arise in the body. You're not aware that you're feeling peaceful. What you are is kind of like a cow out in the pasture, munching food, and not really so conscious. Okay? That is called being peaceful. Or it's called being concentrated. Sometimes you get very concentrated, but you're not really awake. On the other hand, the opposite, you could sit some time and have a lot of thoughts or be planning a great deal or have a lot of fear, some of the kinds of things that people brought up, and be very present with it. Note fear or planning or thinking. And even though you're not so peaceful or concentrated, you're really present with it. And that's the quality of mindfulness. It's not judging and it's not making yourself peaceful. It's something radically different from what we do most of the time. Most of the time we're involved in evaluating and trying to make things a certain way. And to be aware or awake or mindful is to listen to what actually is without trying to change it at all for a moment. Do you think you could do that? To just be with things exactly as they are without trying to make them different? That's the art of meditation. And if we want to discover the deepest spiritual questions, who are we? What is our true nature? How does the mind work? What is the nature of desire or fear or love? You don't get those answers from thinking or planning or trying to figure or making. The deepest questions become answered in the silence, in the listening itself. When the heart and the mind is silent, is tranquil, is listening without trying to make things any way different than they are, there's a kind of opening or renewal. And then we can see what is true about life. And it is that truth, that seeing, that vision, that brings us freedom. And not anything else but that. So to be aware or be mindful is to see or sense or feel what is present with a kind of balance that neither rejects it nor grasps it. Without fear, and I don't mean that fear won't arise, but allowing the fear to be there is just another thing as well. Just being with what's here. It's to see what's present. It has two parts to it. To notice what's present. And then there's a second part to this attention. Is to see what happens to it. So that if a feeling, happiness or joy or sadness or grief or itching or tingling or whatever happens to arise, you have two jobs in your awareness. The first is to notice what's present. You can name it happy, or joy, or rapture, or sorrow, or anger, or itching, or hot, or cold. So the first thing is just to acknowledge this is what's here. Then the second is to see what happens as you pay attention to it. You feel the cold, or hot, or anger, or happy, or sad, and you note angry, and you see what happens, like you did with your fear while you were driving, and what happens. If you begin to listen deeply without trying to change things in any way, their deeper truth will start to speak. And what you see almost inevitably as you look is that wherever you listen, it changes. It's there for a few seconds or part of a minute, and then guess what happens? It dissolves and some new state or new thought or new sensation appears. Whatever you see will teach you other things. It will teach you that it cannot be grasped, that no matter how much you want to control body and heart and mind, since things don't last, you can't really control it. And so you have to find some other kind of understanding, which Alan Watts called the wisdom of insecurity, not of holding it, but really of releasing things. If you listen, you also discover that life is played out in duality, that there's hot and cold and sweet and sour and pleasure and pain. And instead of fighting this fact, you start to really feel it in your bones, in your marrow, in the midst of your life. And so you can make some peace with it. So listening is to see what's actually here and then see its process, see what the nature of our life is. And in that, listening to the body, the heart, the spirit, the mind, all the spiritual questions that you might ever have begin to be answered. How to live wisely, what it means to love, what desire is, what fear is. Because you feel it, you see how it operates. Now to listen in this way requires several things from us. The first thing it requires is a kind of humility. And the humility isn't that, oh, I'm a humble person, I'm now a spiritual person and I'm humble. That's just another kind of self-image, like Nasruddin looking in the mirror with some other idea. Humility is recognizing how little we know in a very deep way. I was with a friend who died this week. I was actually with him a bit after he died, so I was just with his body. He died of AIDS. And there was his body, and he was really a good buddy and a loving fellow. And it was clearly not him anymore. I mean, it was sort of yellow, and it was very cold to touch it, kind of clammy. And all the spirit and life that was this person was nothing to do with that body. But it was so strange, because the day before, there he was, talking to people. And then, what is that? Anybody got an idea what that is? You know, or how about love? We're all so much wanting love. But what is love? Or what is consciousness? What does it mean to be aware? Or where did the earth come from? All these things, these big round balls of rock with a little bit of water on the surface, or of gases, or of fire, these huge fireballs that hang in the middle of space. Where did those come from? Anybody got an idea? I mean, the real basic questions, human life. So humility, it's also called beginner's mind. It's seeing that in many ways we know so little. We're just beginners. There's a story of an old Hasidic rabbi who every morning walks across the town square to the temple to pray. And one morning he's walking across the town square to go to the temple, and he runs into the police chief, this old Cossack, who says, "Good morning, Rebbe, where are you going?" And the rabbi says, "I don't know." And he says, "You don't know," and grabs him by the arm. "What do you mean? For 25 years, every morning you walk across this square, this direction, and go to the temple to pray. Don't give me that kind of lip." And he grabs him and he drags him across the square to the police station. And he's just about to push him in the jail cell, and the rabbi turns around and he says, "You see, you don't know." And the truth is that we don't know. And we have some odds, maybe, that tomorrow will be a certain way. But some days you're going to be really surprised. It's not going to be just what you think. And so the first thing that's needed in this meditative process is to listen with that sense of humility. I don't know. Let me see what desire is about, or what contentment, or what fear, or what the movement of mind or thought. Let me begin to listen. Now the second thing that's necessary to listen is a sense of stillness. Kabir, the Indian poet, says, I don't know what kind of a God we've been talking about. The caller chants in a loud voice at dusk. Does he think that God is deaf? Don't you know God hears the ringing of the anklets on the feet of an insect as it walks? I think I told you this poem the first week. But it's that kind of listening. It's not so much the listening of being peaceful all the time. Has anybody found that in meditation yet? But it's the listening of a kind of stillness I would call a receptivity, so that you listen to the feet of the insects, or you feel when the breath is soft and when it's long and when it's short, and when the body contracts and when it releases. And when you're listening to desire, is there pain in that, or is it pleasant? Or when you become aware of not having desire in the mind, when you're not wanting, what is that quality like? To really listen to deep things inside, the kind of stillness. And then the third thing that's necessary to listen in a deep way is a real openness, or I would call it a tenderness of one's heart as well. This is from a woman, a friend of mine who died of cancer, and she went through a whole long saga trying to heal herself. She said, I had long periods at first, after learning I had cancer, when I felt incredibly shaky, crying a lot, agitated, close to falling apart, dwelling on fears of pain and thoughts of death. And then unbidden would come thoughts of others who are suffering on this planet at this moment. Of all who have suffered in the past through loss or difficulty or pain, and I would immediately feel a wave of peace and calm pass through me. I no longer felt alone. I no longer felt singled out. Instead, I felt an incredible connection with all these people, like we were part of the same huge family that shared our joys and shared our sorrows. But to be able to listen means that our heart has to be willing to feel the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, both of them. And it's sometimes when we're sitting, and the thing that's the hardest for us, our restlessness, or our boredom, or our loneliness, or the grief that we've run away from for lots of years, or the desire that we never really let ourselves feel, or those things, or our separateness, or our longing comes, and we feel that, and we say, no, no, I'll meditate on anything but this. I just don't want to feel this. And we spend our whole life running from that. In that moment when we say, I can't stand it, I'll just sit and feel my despair, or my loss, or my fear, or grief. In those moments when we face our shadow that we've tried to put behind us, meditation really deepens. That's the place where you learn the power of the heart and the power of awareness. Gandhi talked about that as the source of compassion, that we need to learn to love the most difficult parts of ourselves if we're going to love anything else in the world. It means also listening as we do to hear the truth of the seasons of life. Everything which is created, everything which has the nature to arise, passes away. If you could just get that one thing really deeply, that's all you need. Everything that arises passes. Every beautiful and terrible and amazing and magnificent form that comes in this dance of light and shadow is here for a while and passes. Nothing is permanent. And to hear or to listen inside is to get a sense of the seasons of spring and summer and fall and winter, of birth and death, of joy and sorrow, and see that they are natural. That death is supposed to follow birth, just like winter is supposed to follow fall and spring follows winter. It's Easter season. That's really the meaning of Easter, is death and rebirth and renewal. To sit and listen in this way, to accept and to feel, is what develops a quality the Buddha called the heart of greatness. And when you look at, you know, if there's anyone that does inspire you from spiritual traditions, whether it's Gandhi or the Buddha or Jesus or Mother Mary or Ramana Maharshi or whoever it happens to be, if you look at the pictures or the images, you look at the eyes of those people, it's not so much what they know, but it's really the spirit of their heart that's seen everything and really loved it all, accepted it all. Now, in this acceptance, I don't mean that you can't act. And the talk next week is going to be about how once we've listened, it then becomes necessary to respond. So I'm not saying that we don't respond in life. We constantly do. But the first and the deepest place to find our freedom is to see what's true and make our peace with it, come to terms with it. I read you something, if I may, a passage to end this. From Hermann Hesse's book, Siddhartha, remember from high school? This is the end of the book. Siddhartha listened. He was now listening intently, completely absorbed, quite empty, taking in everything. He felt that he had now completely learned the art of listening. He'd often heard all this before, all these numerous voices in the river. But today they sounded different. He could no longer distinguish the different voices, the merry voice from the weeping voice, the childish voice from the manly voice. They all belong to each other, the lament of those who yearn, the laughter of the wise, the cry of indignation, the groan of the dying. They were all interwoven and interlocked, entwined in a thousand ways. And all the voices, all the goals, all the yearnings, all the sorrows, all the pleasures, all the good and evil, all of them was the world. All of them together was the stream of events, the music of life. When Siddhartha listened attentively to this river, to this song of a thousand voices, and did not listen to only the sorrow or only the laughter, when he did not bind himself to one particular voice, but heard them all, then the whole, the unity, the great song consisted of harmony. And from that hour, Siddhartha ceased to fight against his destiny. There shone in his face the serenity of knowledge of one who is no longer confronted with conflict of desire, who has found salvation, who is in harmony with the stream of events, full of sympathy and compassion, surrendering himself to the stream, belonging to the unity of all things. And that's that quality of listening. For too long in our lives and our culture, we have run away from ourselves and run away from listening to the earth, to the needs of the oceans and the trees and the ecology and the children and the old people and what really fulfills our life. And to meditate in some deep way is to reopen that capacity to listen. Now, I'd like to do a little exercise, if we could, for a moment, because we're about to expand the field of meditation yet further. So this exercise will be as follows. For 3 minutes, when we begin, I'd like you to close your eyes and count your thoughts. Okay, we work with breath and body and feelings and so forth. So when we begin in a minute, you will close your eyes and wait with your mind open like a movie screen or like a sky. And you sit like the cat at the mouse hole and count the thoughts when they come. Now, a few things that may help you. Thoughts can come in a couple of forms. Sometimes you get picture thoughts. Sometimes you'll have word thoughts. Sometimes you get the audio-visual portion together. Thoughts are your associations to things. If you feel an itch or you hear the sound of the rain or there's a pain in your knee, those are direct sensations. That's just an itch or sound or pain. But if as soon as the pain comes in, you think, I wonder how much longer it will be that this will last, or you hear the rain and you think, gee, I wonder if it's going to rain tomorrow too, or you feel the itch and say, huh, I didn't think there were any mosquitoes in here. I wonder what's making this itch. That's the thought part. Do you understand the difference? The direct sensation and then the thought. Now, they're tricky. Sometimes when you watch for them, they won't come out for a little bit. But you hang out there, and they'll show themselves. Or they get very quiet. You wait, and all of a sudden the thought will say, gee, it's getting really quiet in here, isn't it? You go, okay, 16, gotcha. Or they sneak up from behind and pretend they're not a thought. They'll say things like, there haven't been many thoughts yet, have there? You go, all right, got 17. We tend to identify so directly with all of these things. And so this is a beginning exercise in listening to this inner stream. So now let your eyes close for a moment. Sit comfortably. In just 3 minutes, don't count the numbers. I know they're a thought. Okay, let yourself come back. First numbers, how many thoughts did people count?
Four?
13, 6? 20? 15? 30? See, some people just have short thoughts. Others have a few really long ones. Now, were they mostly pictures or words? Words for many, pictures for some. Both. What you begin to do when you do this exercise is simply learn about your own style of thinking. Some people have almost all pictures and very little words. Some others will have both pictures and words, sometimes synchronized together, but sometimes the pictures will be more memories or dream pictures or other things, and the words will be planning. They'll serve different functions. Some people have almost all words and very rarely pictures. You can be aware of thought before it arises. There's a sort of pre-thought. It's almost like you're about to burp. And there's this mental... It's true. There's this kind of sensation in there when you're really listening. Now, what you begin to see in this very simple exercise is that it's possible not only to become aware of the breath or the body sensations or sounds, hearing, we can include those now, but to become aware as well of this inner stream of images and pictures and words that for the most part is quite unexamined. Now, I don't mean to say that you're going to be watching your thoughts like we just did or counting them all the time. That would probably drive you crazy if you're not already. But it becomes useful to understand this process and see how it runs our life and it affects us. Because most people go around all the time and don't know that series of pictures and words and things are going on in there. And yet they create much of our world. The whole city of San Francisco was built out of that. Somebody said, let's put a building over there. Let's move the roads over there. They had a picture or a thought about it. And then they built that road and the building. And gradually everybody's thoughts got translated into action, and pretty soon there was a big city. And much of our life comes out of the movement that responds to thought. When you begin to know how the mind works, then instead of being its servant, which we are mostly, it runs us, it becomes something that you can use rather than be lost. So one of the key insights that you can begin to get in meditation is simply the nature of how your own mind is operating. And in that, see that there are possibilities of how you relate to it. One possibility is that we take it very seriously and believe all its thoughts and moods and so forth. And that leads to a certain kind of life. Generally speaking, it leads to a lot of complexity and suffering. And another is to listen from someplace in our heart that isn't the mind, but which listens with a greater sense of spaciousness or wisdom or understanding and then responds to things rather than being caught up in all. So we'll begin to include thought. Let's do a bit more sitting, but do you want to stretch first? Why don't you stand up just for 30 seconds or so? And when you've stretched or feel ready to, let yourself sit back down. We'll just sit for about 10 minutes this time. Again, we're following what's called the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four major areas of awareness that we can develop. First, working with breath and body, and then the heart and feelings. And now working with the thoughts and the movement of mind directly. So in this sitting, again, you find a posture where you can sit comfortably and erect. And when we begin, you'll go back to your breath again, using that as the center of the meditation, and really listening to it. See if you can feel its beginning, or its middle, or its end, or what the sensations are like tonight. Is it short, or long, or soft? As you pay attention to the breath, if body sensations, or sounds, or moods become quite strong, drop the breath and name them, giving them the same mindful attention you gave to the breath. In addition now, we'll include the field of thought. So as you follow the breath, if thinking arises, and it's quite strong, it kind of entangles you or you get off in it, and it can be a series of pictures or words, it can be memory or planning, then name the thinking. You can just say thinking, thinking, or you might note planning, planning, or remembering, remembering, very simply. Usually when you become aware of it, it will dissolve. Your awareness is like sunlight on the fog. The thought very often will dissolve, and then you notice it dissolve and go back to the breath. If it's a very charged or strong thought, you may note thinking, thinking, and it may continue. If that's so, then you can keep noting it softly, remembering, remembering, or thinking, 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 while it's present until it does go away, until it dissolves when it will, and then you go back to the breath. So keep it simple, using the breath as the center, and if it feels complicated or too full of objects, stay mostly with the breath. But when something is strong, sensations, moods, or thoughts, and it kind of pulls you into it, name it and you recognize it. Be aware of it, notice as it dissolves when it does, and then return back to the breath. notice the breath with a listening attention, a careful feeling this breath. Or else name and be aware of whatever else is strong in this moment. be aware of just what is present without trying to change it. Noticing with a gentle, careful attention. How was that, to add thoughts as another part of the awareness? Did that work for you okay? Please.
I found that I got through my thoughts quicker when I was noticing them.
Uh-huh, yeah. When you notice them, you don't tend to get on the train and take the ride to the destination. It's more like you acknowledge, oh, there's a train, there's a freight car and a whatever, and there's the caboose, goodbye, I'll see you, and then back to your breath. George.
Thoughts are the hardest thing for me not to identify with, not to think that that's what I am. And so to break that association and to be able to look at it is the most difficult, but at the same time it's the most free.
Many of us think we are our thoughts more than anything. And yet if you really want to identify with something, you'd probably be better to identify with your body, because at least that's around for a while. Right? Your thoughts are there for a few seconds and then they go. And have you noticed about your opinions? You know, the opinions you hold at a certain time, if they really are who we are, they change completely. We'd be an entirely different person. But it's true what you say. Our identity is very strong, and most deeply it tends the tense sense of self. We believe this body to be ourselves and our feelings are ourself. But most people, more than anything, take their ideas to be themselves. And so it's a big movement to just say, this is thinking. It's not mine, I don't own it, it's not who I am, it's just thinking, conditioned.
This is a question arising from a certain amount of confusion. I was trying to label my thoughts as thoughts and just let them go. But then when you speak of the kind of understandings that come from meditation, don't those come on the wings of thought? And should not certain thoughts be allowed to unfold so that wisdom can come from them?
Most of the important wisdom that comes from meditation, the deepest wisdom, I should say, comes without thought. It comes as a kind of silent recognition. For example, you may be sitting and desire arises. Say, all right, desire. And all of a sudden there's this observation. This is painful. There's tension in this. It's not much thinking or analyzing, it's just experiencing it. Or some beautiful thing arises in your mind and you say, this is wonderful. So there's the beauty and then there's the attachment or the delighting in it, which is natural. And then you see, oh, I wish it would stay. Not so much thinking about, but that hoping it would stay. And then you watch it fade away and there comes this recognition, I would have liked that, but it doesn't seem in its nature. And so some of the deeper kinds of understandings, questions about love as well, come through a silent listening. Thought only goes so far down and it can analyze or think about, but deeper things will come without the thought. It's not to dismiss the power of thought. We need it to plan and to think. And even within meditation, there can be contemplation or some reflection about what we're seeing that's valuable, which in a way your question points to. But we're also learning a kind of understanding or way of perceiving that doesn't involve so much thought, but more direct experience. Is that helpful in the confusion? Please.
Can you elaborate a little on the concept of silence?
By silence, I mean not reacting. So that's the first thing. I mean the silence that receives whatever's there, including restlessness and images and words. My teacher used the phrase, he said, take the one seat in the center of the room and let all the visitors come in through the door and pass out the door, and you just sit in the seat and see who comes and goes. So that's what I mean by silence. Instead of getting up and doing a dance with this one and trying to beat that one away and cooking dinner for that one and, you know, tearing your hair out and weeping when this other one comes in, you just sit in the chair and you see who comes and goes. That's what I mean by silence. It's a silence of the heart in some way. There is, as well, this sense of awareness. And it's very subtle. When we don't identify with thoughts, then the next position we take, well, I've got to be in here somewhere. I'm the one who's watching. I'm the witness then. Not my thoughts and my feelings, but I'm the one who's watching. And when meditation gets very still, you can start to listen deeply and sense that there is witnessing. And that witnessing comes for a certain period and it passes away. And it too isn't me or mine. It too isn't self. And then you say, well, wait a second, then who am I? And you say, well, none of these things last, so I guess I can't be any of them. And you begin to understand that you are nothing, and being nothing, that you're everything, that the boundaries are really quite artificial. There are moments of silence without any experience. There's a kind of dropping into the void where there's no sights or sounds and no thought or perception. That happens sometimes too. And then it all starts up again. So that's not the goal particularly. The goal is to be with what's present with wisdom and compassion and freedom rather than with fear and grasping and identification. Okay, that got out there a little bit, so we'll come back for a second to end the evening. I went to my teacher, Ajahn Chah, at one point and told him I was having difficulties in my meditation and I didn't like the way that he was teaching so well. And I didn't like the way the monastery was being run and various other complaints. And I said, one of the problems with you is that you're not consistent. I mean, what kind of an enlightened teacher are you? You say one thing one day and another day. You know, at least you could tell the truth. And I don't know if I even want to stay here. I'm going to go look for a better monastery or something like that. So he laughed, as he usually did. And he said, the way I teach is like this. He said, there's a road that I look down and I know it well. And maybe it's a bit foggy or it's dusk. You can't see so well. And someone is walking down it. And they're about to fall off in a ditch on the right-hand side or get lost in a little sidetrack off to the right. So I look down the road and I yell, hey there, go to the left. Then a little while later I look up and that same person or somebody else is walking on the road and they're about to fall off in the ditch on the left-hand side or get lost in some little sidetrack over on the left. And so I yell out, hey you, now, go to the right. He said, when I teach, that's all I do. I listen to see if you're attached over here or afraid over there and say, let go of that piece. Now let go of that piece. Now come back to just be in the center and see things as they are. And that's it's a wonderful image for this quality of listening or attention or being with things, finding that inner balance. As I said, next week we'll talk more about how when you are present, there comes a natural way of responding to the world. It's not that you become a mushroom or a dodo or a potato or a meditator or something like that. Spare you all of those things. So for this week, as you go home and continue, then again, this is like coming to your piano lesson. We have a new lesson and there's a new piece of music and we're including paying attention to memory or planning or thinking, or if for about half of you, you might want to add the category judging. And judging, come thank you for your opinion, back to your breath again. You can kind of thank the judgments. They have all kinds of things to say. So for this week, again, work with sitting, morning or evening or both if you like, for at least 20 minutes or half an hour. Keep it simple. Use the breath as the center. And when sensations or moods or sounds or thoughts really catch you up or are strong, then name them and be with them. Notice what happens to them as long as they're present. When they pass away, then go back to the breath again. And it's through the practicing of it that you start to feel or come to terms with all the different parts of yourself and learn more how your feelings and your mind and your reactions and these things are working. And it makes the meditation then really useful to you in your life.
This concludes the fourth class on the inner art of meditation. Our program continues with the fifth and final class in our series with Jack Kornfield.
We started, as you recall, from the premise that it's possible to learn meditation and learn to practice in a way that's relevant to our life and times in the West, in our culture and our society here. And that we were going to undertake a training, much as one would learn taking lessons, tennis or piano or some other discipline. Started on the first evening by working with the breath as a way to calm and collect and quiet the mind and bring the mind and body together. And then opened up in the second week, expanding the meditation to work with all of the energies and sensations of the body, the pleasure and the painful sensations, the tingling, itching, hot, cold, really making the body itself a field of meditation. And our reactions to it, learning a meditative relationship. Then we opened up further on the next week to look at the hindrances and difficulties and the feelings of the heart. Desire, fear, anger, love, joy, and include those in meditation. And then last week, we included the realm of the mind. In particular, we did the exercise of counting the thoughts. And seeing that with our awareness, we can even notice the kinds and frequency and quality of thought, memory, planning, etc., and begin to develop a wise relationship to the whole inner process of thought. Now, sometimes people get a bit confused. As we open up, it seems more complicated. Is the breath better, or should I do the thoughts and the feelings as well? Or perhaps at this point on the fifth week, you begin to think about undertaking the practice after this, and well, how does it fit in with the rest of my life, or how does it fit with other kinds of practices and so forth? How was it for you this past week in working with the instructions that we've done so far? Breath, body, feelings, thoughts. Did that work for you? Anyone? Please.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. There's a thought, there's a feeling, there's a sensation kind of running around the block, chasing them all.
Right. And then I came back to the breath. I could find myself thinking even while I was watching the breath.
Mm.
That was really annoying.
To be thinking while you watch the breath.
Right.
And before you hadn't been thinking while you were watching the breath?
No, I could actually just focus on the breath.
Okay. So one thing to say is that the training that we've done in these different aspects of awareness is to give you a complete sense of the meditation, to give you a sense that it's possible to be aware of thought or feeling or mood or sensation in a meditative way, to give you the range of the power of mindfulness. If you feel confused, as you did, then make it simpler. And there are two ways to do that. The first is to acknowledge the agitation or confusion or whatever's there. So all of a sudden you feel agitated or confused. What you do is note, oh, agitated, and you acknowledge it and feel it and observe it, agitated as long as it's there, and see what happens to it. Then when it's passed, after some time, then you simplify and you go back and you just do the breath until something really pulls you away. And so once in a while there'll be a strong sensation, or there'll be a big thought, or there'll be some mood or feeling, or sad or happy, that's so strong that you can't watch the breath, that you would struggle to do that. So you leave the breath and you focus on that, acknowledging it and returning back. So you make it simpler. You could try that anyway. Even if you do that, guess what? Some days you'll sit down there and it will be agitated and busy anyway. Because it does what it wants for the most part. You can train it a little bit, but it has its own life. Sort of like training something that's really by nature a wild animal. You know, and you can get it to roll over or come beg for food or something, a few tricks. But mostly it has its own nature. You can make friends with it, so it won't eat you up. You can tame it in that sense, but you have to understand its real nature. I'm glad you asked that. Other questions or comments about the past week, please?
I'm finding that the naming of the things you're thinking of, fear, the words seem to be like overtaking everything somehow. And like in terms of like if it's like fear, instead of really experiencing the fear, I'm like just saying fear.
Mm-hmm. You know? So the naming gets bigger than the experience.
Right.
Okay, that's a good question, also an important one. Two things you can do. One is there is actually a volume control on the naming device. And the way that you might work with it is this. You turn it all the way off first. So that you sit there and you're feeling fear and you recognize you're saying, fear, which is really say, go away, fear, get out of here. But you see that the voice has gotten louder than the experience. Stop the labels. Just feel what's going on in your body, what the mind feels like, what the heart feels like, what the experience is. And then once you've established yourself in feeling it or sensing it, then like a little salt in the soup, very softly try adding a whisper. Fear. But very, very softly in the background. You can play with it. And at that point, then it becomes useful because it kind of keeps track of it. It gets even the thinking process, which would otherwise be analyzing and off somewhere else, directed toward keeping you with the experience. You can play with that. Close your eyes for a second, if you would. Now go inside. Tell me, what mood or feeling do you notice as you sit here? You might be nervous because I ask you to do this. Okay, keep them closed. So what feeling is it?
Nervous.
All right, now see if you can do that. First, just without the name, just feel it. You know, your breath stops or what your body feels like. The state in your heart's beating a little bit. Whatever it feels like. Can you feel it? Right, now add very softly. Nervous, very softly. Still staying with the feeling. How's it going in there? Okay? You get a sense that you can do that?
Yeah. I think that turning it off completely is the thing that
helps.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you. That's good. Other people, questions from doing your practice over the past week? Please.
Every so often I'm reaching an area that I think you term as quiet or at peace. At that time, it's real comfortable, but with the introduction of trying to keep track of thoughts or naming them, it's almost like you hear a conversation in another room.
But then you're afraid you're missing something in the other room.
No, I'm afraid I should be naming or waiting for something to happen, and it's not quite breaking through, and it's... I'm missing the peace period, and I'm also missing what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's the term that I end up doing is waiting.
Lovely. Uh-huh. So you're meditating perfectly, and even acknowledging waiting is okay. I mean, just to do that is fine. What happens when you acknowledge waiting? Then what happens?
I get more peaceful.
Uh-huh.
The noise of the thoughts sort of go away, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's a snapback to, wait a second, where did those thoughts go, and did I miss one? Was I supposed to be in touch with one or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like an emptiness there, and it's kind of a different space.
Mm-hmm. There are a variety of spaces you will go through. Some might be calm, and certain people get a little bit, in a very subtle way, a little anxious when it's calm. Well, what am I supposed to do now? It's quiet. Which is really a kind of response of a subtle fear in the calm. It's almost like as the thoughts start to go away, who else goes away? Talked about this last week, right? We do, since mostly we're made up of the stories we tell ourselves. The universe is made of stories, not atoms. So we tell these stories to keep a sense of ourselves. And it goes away, and then something in there gets nervous. Wait a second, it's getting too quiet. And maybe I should start thinking about how quiet it is in here or something to get me back. All you need to do is softly acknowledge thinking or waiting or sometimes impatience or anxiety. And gradually you become accustomed. If you look at these things, you start to make your peace with being calm. We're not used to being quiet and not having so much thought, and it's a whole new dimension of experience that can open up. And you can make your peace with it, and in fact find it, as you may have at some of those times, refreshing and delightful. Now, one other thing to say about it. That is not the aim of the meditation. It will come at times, almost uninvited. It will come and it will become quiet. Other times, you'll be filled with thought. Either of those states are equally good objects of meditation. If there's a lot of thought, you know that there's thought there, and you see it truly for what it is, and you relate with compassion and wisdom. There's the mind doing its thinking dance. Then the thought goes away. Say, now there's the space of great calm or spaciousness, and you acknowledge that aspect of the mind.
And the in-between as well.
And the in-between as well, the waiting or nervousness. It's a little bit like reading a novel. I don't know if I used Agatha Christie in the first or second week. Did I talk about that? You start to read Agatha, first few pages, you're not so into it, you're reading, but you're also aware of the traffic going by and what's happening, and you're thinking, you know, what you're going to cook for dinner. When you get near the last chapter and you're really excited and who did it, and they're just about to sit down and Miss Marple's going to tell everybody what really happened, you can get so concentrated in it that you don't notice somebody walking in the room. You don't hear anything. Have you had that experience in reading? You've been so focused in a book? Similarly, there are degrees of concentration in meditation where in the beginning or at certain times in the sitting, you'll be aware of the calm or you'll be aware of your breath. And in the background, you'll also notice thoughts coming and going and sounds and so forth. That's not a problem, it's just that it's there, and you're still continuing to read, but it's early in the book. At other times, in the same sitting or another day, you can get so deeply concentrated or collected or surrendered into the breath or body that you don't notice time passing, you don't notice people around, and you have this sense of very deep collectedness. That's just the way the process works. The important thing is to allow that, to see that it works that way, and not to get attached to it being one way or another. You nourish the concentration, you develop awareness, but it's still a wild animal. You can tame it a bit and use it. But the truth is it's going to change all the time, and no matter how good a meditator you are, the mind will do things sometimes and there's nothing you can do about it. The big insight that the Buddha had that liberated him was that you can't control anything, hardly, I mean, you know. And that was where he found liberation. It's a very different direction that we're used to, and it goes deep, what I'm saying. If you're idealistic about meditation, it won't work over the long run. There are other practices, and there are things that I've done, ways that you can count, ways that you can stabilize your mind, samadhi exercises you can do. a lot of breathing and a lot of repetition, and you can get your mind by steadiness and concentration, repetition and will to stop. And you can dissolve your body and you can go into states of ecstasy or light. It's really possible. I mean, very accessible if you put in the weeks of effort or whatever it takes to do it. Then you come back. And here you are again. Also, I mean, even though it was far out, just as going to Japan or Antarctica or something would be far out, or taking some interesting psychedelics might be far out or something, it doesn't necessarily give you wisdom. It might give you peace, or it might give you ecstasy, or it might give you light. But wisdom is that which liberates, and that sees that in the long run you possess nothing. That you're not the owner of things. There's a story, one more, of Mullah Nasruddin, I'll tell you, and then we'll do our first sitting this evening. He was going to the marketplace, and he ran to a good friend who said, "I'm about to get married, Nasruddin." And Mullah kind of congratulated him, and he said, "Tell me, Mullah, have you ever thought to get married?" So Nasruddin said, "Well, you know, I considered it. I wanted to get married at one time. And so I went in search of the woman who would make a perfect wife. I went to Isfahan and I met a very beautiful and gracious woman, really charming and lovely, but she had no spiritual side. So then I went further to Damascus and I met this woman who was deeply spiritual, but she didn't get along very well in the world. I met a woman in Beirut, beautiful, gracious, kind, skillful in the world and otherwise, but we didn't communicate so well. Finally, I found her in Cairo, this woman. She was gracious, deeply spiritual, beautiful to look at, sophisticated in the world. Just really perfect in every way." His friend said, "Well, then, did you marry her?" And he said, "No, unfortunately, she was looking for the perfect man." And that's really what waiting is about in a certain sense as well. We can spend our life I don't mean to single you out, because we all do that. Your sense of waiting actually was an interesting and one that's worth investigating. But waiting for the perfect moment, the perfect meditation, even an adequate moment, and an adequate meditation, you know. And there's a line in the third Zen patriarch, one of my favorite lines from the patriarch of Zen Buddhism, who all of his life ended up, he wrote one tiny little book that's about, would be about 3 pages in length. And somewhere in the middle of it, it said, non-duality, or to live in harmony, in the oneness of things, is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. It's not perfect, it never has been, and it never will be. Or as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross put it, "I'm not okay, you're not okay, and that's okay." That's the Buddhist truth of suffering, that things are the way they are rather than all the ways that we would hope them to be. And to come into a wise or compassionate relationship with life through meditation is to relate to what is rather than what we would like to be. So let's sit now again for about 15 minutes, taking a posture that's comfortable and stable, letting your eyes close gently, and first coming into your body, we'll just sit for 15 minutes or so, scanning your body, see if there are places of obvious tension that you can soften. Let the eyes and face be soft, the shoulders and hands relax. Let go in your belly and chest. Let the heart be soft, belly soft. and yet you're alert and erect. This interesting blend, present and receptive. Now go back to your breath. This will be the center of the meditation. Feeling the movement in the midst of everything else, there is this ever-present flow of breath. Feel it as it actually is. Coolness, tingling, pressure, movement, cool, warm, beginning, middle, end. The breath breathes itself. Let it have whatever rhythms it wishes. Yours is to feel or listen, sense. As you follow the breath and come back to it when the mind wanders far away, if your attention is drawn to anything else because it's strong, pain or pleasure in the body, vibration, itching,